thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I think I already have.
Here's John Williams.
That's just one right there. Hi, it's John. It's 111. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Come downtown, wave, say hi, and I'll wave right back. I just promise. Later in the show, we'll update you on Jeff Sessions' session tomorrow. We'll preview that with ABC 1 hour from... 1 hour from... Woof. We'll do that 1 hour from now. In the meantime, a couple of other things to talk about. By the way, Kim, I'm just going to read to you, or Steve's actually sallying up to the microphone, and I don't want to interrupt your lunch or your sleep over there, Steve. You always look remarkably good to me when you get back from one of these international trips of yours. You seem rested and able to sit up and take fluids. You really seem to be well.
You know what? They're fun trips, and we have a good time. And
you and 30-plus listeners just got back from Iceland.
Make new friends. Yeah, we got back on Saturday evening about 8 o'clock.
Just give me this, the highlight, the moment where you went, wow, I'm so glad I sat in an airplane for 9 hours or whatever.
The moment I said, not another spectacular waterfall.
Is that it?
No, but, you know, we saw so many things. It was such a different, you know, you've gone on these trips, and a lot of it has to do with different culture and history and things. I've never been on such a physical trip. I'm looking at different, you know, different lava fields or mountain ranges, or we went to a power plant, of all things. We had a tour of a power plant where they talked about how almost 80% of the homes in Iceland are fueled by the hot water that's underneath them.
Hmm.
You know, they pump up the hot water, they cool groundwater with it, and then you, all over nowhere you go in Iceland, you see these pipelines,
yeah,
and they're shipping hot water, you know, for as far as 50 miles, and they only lose a degree in the shipment, and then, you know, heating people's homes. It was remarkable. You'd come upon, you'd see these flows of steam coming out of the ground.
Yeah.
Get off the bus, go stand by it, and, you know, it just would be a hot spring. Or
I wonder if that makes any, I guess if you grow up there, you don't get nervous about it. But as an American, they'd go, wow, so how is that happening again?
Right.
Well, the magma of the hot earth is right underneath your house.
Remember the earthquake of, what, 7 years ago where the air traffic was disrupted for mm-hmm. weeks.
Yeah,
we were in that area, and we stopped at this farmer's house, and his house was covered with, you know, inches of volcanic dust.
Yeah, said earthquake. Did you mean volcano?
I meant volcano.
That's
yeah.
what I thought.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
meant.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, and they actually made a movie about it, and they showed the buildings just buried in volcanic dust. And they, you know, our guide Vigdis would say, "There's this volcano, it's overdue. There's that one, it's overdue."
Yeah.
And they just kind of live. They, you know, how we used to have tornado drills in school. They have volcano drills.
Really?
When they have to get out of an area
where the hot ash just rains down upon you.
Yeah, they said they would get maybe a half an hour notice with some of these volcanoes.
I want to live in an area where parking tickets are overdue, where Game of Thrones is overdue.
Yeah.
T-minus 4 weeks, by the way. Not where volcanoes are overdue.
It has a real beauty to it. I mean, some of it is spectacularly beautiful. Some of it is starkly beautiful. You know, I mean, I'd never driven through a lava field before.
Brenda and I enjoy these trips, but we also enjoy the culture, the shopping, the restaurants, the
right.
urban scape. This sounds more landscape. Would I be a little bored with this, with Iceland?
No, I mean, what you're describing wasn't there as much. I mean,
yeah.
It was in Reykjavik. We walked around, but Reykjavik was like Evanston, you know, maybe a little bigger than Evanston.
So not that big is your point.
Not that big.
Yeah.
And when we were going up to the northern areas, you know, it was like there'd been a neutron bomb and it was just us. You know, there weren't a lot of people around.
Yeah, but then the next day you get on the bus and you go see another fallout scene. I mean, after a while, did you want a tree or, I don't know,
well, no,
just
were,
a cute artsy village, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I was going to say there were trees, but wait a minute, there weren't really trees. No, it was beautiful.
I mean, the
waterfalls.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
I really am. It sounds spectacular.
We went through this one town up in a northern fjord that was only accessible by tunnels on either side of it going through a mountain. The tunnel we went through was, I don't know if it was probably 2 or 3 miles.
Was it due for a collapse?
It wasn't due for a collapse, but it was a two-way, one-lane tunnel.
How long was the
tunnel?
Think
of that. It was a couple miles.
Oh, that's not happening.
So there would be little tiny pullovers if you needed to. But
seriously.
Two-way, one-lane tunnel.
Who thought that was a good idea?
Well, at the time when they built it, it's all they needed.
Brendan and I would say, you know what? We'll stay here. We'll have lunch. You guys do the two-mile, one-way tunnel. to some town, and then maybe you make it back, maybe you don't. Either way, you guys go. We're good. We'll have lunch here in the village.
We saw a puffin, you know, nesting puffin, and see a couple of us saw a seal.
We'll have the muffins. You go see the puffins.
It's a puffin. Yeah.
Puffin.
No, it was a good time. And you know how those groups work. By the end of it, everybody's best friends. And I love the Facebook page. Everyone's posting on it, so it's been really great.
That's nice, Steve. Welcome back. You sound great.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Glad you did that.
We're thinking maybe next year Norway and England.
Yeah.
And then I'm working on you too, but
I'll lead one of those trips. Okay. You know, my next one is going to be a year from now. Well, in April, Brenda and I are going with Nancy Kelly's company. Actually, it's Sue Kelly's company now. Her daughter runs Kelly Cruises, and we're going to do a Spain, France, Italy thing. Barcelona to Rome, and so we'll be in France,
oh, nice.
Spain, and Italy, and that'll be a lot of fun too.
I tell you what, there's so much value in
right now
travel.
Yes,
I don't mean money value. I mean just seeing that other people can do it very well too, and just to understand that it's a small, big world.
Well, I'm glad you said that, and maybe you do that intentionally, maybe you don't. But one of my big "let's keep traveling" speeches is people are intimidated by what's happening in the world, and I think we will all suffer if we stop traveling for whatever reason. You know, it's funny because the last time we went to Paris with a bunch of listeners, I know some people were intimidated about going to France. They were nervous about going to Paris. And I thought, this is ironic. You're leaving Chicago, okay? The people in Paris are afraid to come here. I think, by and large, everything is safe for everybody. And then there's those 0.001 percentile of people who find themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time. But it's not only fun and safe, but I think it's important that we continue to, as peoples, mix.
I also think, you know, maybe after World War II, we were sort of the king of the world and could look down at the way other people did things. I think that's such a mistake. And I think by going and seeing that because they're doing something differently in France doesn't mean that we're doing it better or they're doing it worse. You know, we have different approaches to things.
Yeah, I know. And sometimes it's small, like, you know, how they pour their coffee or access a cab, and it might be how they, you know, vote for tax raises or whatever. I mean, it's all over the map. By the way, I'm going to read you a description of something. Speaking of legislation, and you tell me if this is a good idea or not. Mike Quigley, did you see what the Illinois?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay, so then you know the punchline on this. I'll read his press release. It says, today, U.S. Representative Mike Quigley from Illinois, the 5th District, co-founder and co-chair of the Congressional Transparency Caucus, introduced the Communications Over Various Feeds Electronically for Engagement Act. This bill codifies, and here's what the bill will do, it codifies vital guidance from the National Archives by amending the Presidential Records Act to now include the term social media. In other words, previously when presidents would do things, they would be saved in the National Archives, and it would include written stuff and email and spoken stuff and video and audio tapes, but it didn't include social media. Now they want to have it include social media. What a good idea, you say. John, how could that be controversial? Because the acronym for this act, for the Communications Over Various Feeds Electronically for Engagement Act, is the COVFEV Act. It's the Trump mistweet that
COVFEV?
Mystify. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Covfeve?
I've always said Covfeve, and by always, I mean for the last week since it's existed. But however you pronounce that. So is this a legitimate piece of legislation, or is this just him ridiculing the president like everybody likes to?
Well, I know it's a real issue, and it's maybe he's
losing. He should not have named it that.
Maybe not. But it is a real issue because by law, anything put on paper or things like that must be saved in archives, and right now the law hasn't kept up with. Certainly President Trump, who uses Twitter, and even as when I was overseas last week, was, you know, listening to Sean Spicer say that, you know, those tweets are official and certainly do speak for the country. If they speak for the country, there should be some mechanism to save them or to retrieve them.
Yeah.
And so the law needs to be updated that way. But I see your point. He's sort of shooting himself in the foot by trying to make up a cute name.
Well, yeah, because it looks utterly partisan. It looks like he's just doing that to mock or punish the president. And if it does both, he must consider himself a winner. But I think that he calls him if that doesn't make it look as legitimate as. In fact, when I saw what the acronym spelled out, I thought, oh, this is just, you know, bogus legislation they sometimes throw out there knowing it'll never pass. ordinances they know will never pass, sometimes proclamations that don't mean anything. I thought that's what this was, so that he could just get that idea out there. So according to a new Huffington Post YouGov poll, and again, I said to Elif, let's find somebody else who did the poll besides Huffington Post, though I'm willing to believe that this is mathematically accurate within a margin of error. Since it's HuffPo, I'm a little worried about it. But anyway, here's what HuffPo says. It shows that 46% of Americans polled say Comey is more honest and trustworthy than the president. The headline is, more Americans find Comey trustworthy than the president of the United States. But when I see that only 46% polled say Comey is more honest and trustworthy than the president, I think that's the glass is half empty. You may see it as half full. But the same survey found that 26% say the president is more trustworthy. So you have some undecideds or neithers in there. So one way to look at it is by an almost 2-to-1 ratio, according to this survey, Americans find the former FBI director more credible than the current president, but still only 46%. There were two things that they were asking about. One is the president asking the former FBI director to let go the investigation of Michael Flynn, and the other one was, did the president ask for a pledge of loyalty? Donald Trump said 100% he would swear under oath that he didn't do that. And Comey says, absolutely, he did. I'm sorry, Steve, I cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, those numbers show that we're in we don't trust anyone. Any leader of any institution has got a tall hill to climb in order to earn trust anymore.
I guess so. But the president has sort of made a name for himself, even when he would use a fake PR person who was, in fact, himself, John Miller, to sort of support the president's agenda when he was a real estate magnate or his social life. He has a history of not being completely honest. And if you Google the name Timothy O'Brien, you'll find a story about an interesting deposition in which the president did have to testify under oath. And in that, he was found to have lied 30 times. And it's a fascinating story that sort of gives you a sense of how the president compartmentalizes facts and how, while you might call it a lie, he might not. And here's just one example. I'll speak about this a little more in just a minute. But for instance, during this testimony where the president had to swear under oath what he was saying and whether it was true or not, because he was suing a reporter who wrote a book about him. He was suing a reporter who wrote a book about the president called Trump Nation. And the reporter countersued the president. So when they did discovery, the president actually finds himself having to testify with the documents in front of him. And one of the things was, they said, Mr. Trump, you said that you have 22,000 employees. 22,000 employees. He said, that's right. They said, is this true? He says, well, I don't have 22,000 people that work for me, but my subcontractors, say I'm building a building, well, the concrete guy and the architecture firm and the engineering firm, they all have employees. And since they're working for me, I count them as working for me. So the 22,000 employees is everybody that's working on all of his projects for all of these various companies, even though they're obviously working for more than just him, but he counts them all. It would be as if the Tribune included as an employee, even though they're not on the payroll, the people at the paper mill in Washington State. We don't, because they don't work for us. But the president... I shouldn't laugh, because it's kind of tragic now that this is the same sort of person who's trying to convince you he's telling the truth and he's the president of the United States. But that's how the president sort of confines the truth. They asked him, for instance, how much were you paid for a speech that you gave? He said $1 million. And they said, well, it says here you were paid $400,000. He said, yeah, but the publicity alone was worth $600,000.
That's how he justified his $1 million?
He said they did radio advertising, they did TV, they did print, they did social media. That's got to be worth something. That's good for me. Therefore, I received $1 million in value. If I asked you how much you were paid and someone gave you a check for $400,000, the current president thinks it's totally legitimate to say you were paid $1 million. One other note about the honesty factor. It'll be very interesting to see Sessions' testimony tomorrow, and we'll broadcast as much of it as we think is necessary slash fascinating tomorrow live about this time. I believe Jeff Sessions is supposed to testify tomorrow. Steve, maybe you can back me up on this. I think Sessions talks at 1:30 tomorrow.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
So if that's the case, I'll be very interested in listening in on that. He chose not to speak to a different committee today, and I don't blame him for that. I think it's easy to read a lot into everything, but in this case, that seemed to be the prudent choice. There was an interesting letter to the editor of the Sun-Times today in reader feedback. One was sort of Comey is honest. Another one is Comey is not honest at all. One is Trump is honest. The other is Trump is not honest at all. They're very brief, and I think they're just so representative of who we are as a nation right now. I want to just scan through those real quick. After 1:30 news, that's with Steve, and that's after I also mention that Teddy Roosevelt is going to be in town. The tickets go on sale Wednesday. Wednesday online and on this show, we'll tell you how you can get tickets to see the 26th president and I on stage. TR and I have spoken before. We'll be at the College of DuPage. I'll ask him some questions, then you get to ask him some questions. He'll talk about his life and history. He'll talk about current events if you want to as well. Last time I was on stage with him, we were talking about a variety of things. One is, I said, you know, it'll be hard for you to get elected these days because you were always seen with a gun. And while guns have their advocates, some people would probably have trouble voting for a president today who killed rhinoceroses, who killed elephants, who killed bears, who went on these safaris and hunting expeditions. Some people see Trump as a bit of a Trump. Roosevelt is a bit of a warmonger, though he'll tell you that he absolutely wasn't. But I was warning him that if he were to run for office today, his opponent would run commercials that sound like this.
The campaign commercials would be ruinous. This image of you as a madman who's always shooting or wanting us to shoot. That's going to be tough to sell.
It might be tough to sell to you, but not to real men.
Right.
What is wrong with killing? I like to kill animals. I don't think we even should permit a man to be a citizen who won't kill animals. Daniel Boone killed animals. George Rogers Clark killed animals. Davy Crockett killed animals. Every red-blooded good American in our history has been willing to kill animals. What world do you live in? Get over this pussy-footing sort of squeamishness about blood. All great nations have been warring nations, and all great men, and I'm looking at the men in this room, have a little of the wolf in them.
Teddy Roosevelt on stage with me. It kind of goes like that. Sometimes it's more serious. Literally, we've cried on stage before, and other times we laugh, but it's what it would be like if TR were there to talk to us today. We could use that. Tickets go on sale Wednesday. Make sure you're listening. It's 1:32. Keep listening. The news is... By the way, we've named the show. Tell me if you just love this, Steve. It's either going to work or it's not. You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
The name of my conversation this year with TR... Big shtick. Right? Right? Speak softly, carry a big stick, but it's kind of cheeky, so I've called it big shtick.
Oh, I get it. Oh, yeah.
No, doesn't work.
No, I think it really works. Did you see what they're doing in Central Park with Shakespeare?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
And I think they're totally right to pull the sponsorship of that. No way in hell I'd put my name associated with that. If I was Delta's the airline that pulled out, right? There's no way I would have anything to do with that. If you don't know what we're talking about, you will in a minute. Thank you, Steve. John Williams here.
Hello.
I'm John Williams. The singer is... It's not me. It's Bette Midler.
It's so nice to be back home where I belong.
Bette Midler won the Tony last night. It was nice.
You're looking swell.
I believe she's still giving her acceptance speech.
Manny. You're still glowing, you're still growing, you're still going strong. I feel the room swaying, for the band's playing one of my old favorite songs from way back when. So bridge that gap, fellas, find me an empty lap. Fellas, darling, you'll never go away again.
I had to play a little of that because last night they didn't do this song and Bette didn't even sing it. And I think some of us are a little disappointed in that. And Dean Richards was talking about that this morning. He was there with Steve Cochran this morning and had the explanation for why Bette didn't sing and why they didn't do one of the big numbers.
What was the explanation?
That the show, because there was a disagreement between the producers of the Tonys and the producers of Hello, Dolly. They were fighting.
Mm.
And by the way, Steve, the other point was the show is sold out. You cannot and will not be able to get tickets for it, I guess, from the box office. It sounded like the point was, why should we promote the show that way? I don't exactly understand this, but I think this was Steve's, Dean's inference was, so there's no point in doing the big number like that or having her sing because tickets are unavailable.
Sounds like she didn't want to sing.
I don't know. Yeah, that's what he said. If not, at the end of the day, you know this, that the two sides were fighting, and so you were left without her.
So we got home from dinner last night. I turned on the TV, and Sharon, we were watching it, and she asked me why we watched the Tonys, and I don't have a good explanation.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's not like the Emmys where you know the TV shows or the Oscars where you know the movies. And so we turned it off.
Well, Griff, Brenda, and I were doing kind of the same thing, and we said, let's watch that. And one reason I think you watch it is because it is the least political, I think, of the awards shows. Stephen Colbert came out and said a couple of political things. Kevin Spacey said a couple of political things, but mostly it was apolitical. It's joyful. Nobody was running the table this year. It wasn't the year of Hamilton. And because you think you're going to see some great singing and dancing numbers. And, in fact, you didn't really last night. I was a little disappointed in the show. Watched most of it, but it wasn't as much of a stopper as I thought it would be.
Remember, it used to be on PBS, and no one even knew it was on. I mean, they have made a TV show out of it,
As they should. I mean, when you do see those people up there, you think, God, they are good—the singing and the dancing and the choreography. It's just spectacular. I'm a fan of the shows when they come through town. I was a little disappointed in the TV production of it last night. It's 1:45. After 2 o'clock, we'll visit with a reporter from ABC and preview for you Jeff Sessions' session tomorrow. We'll broadcast some of that live tomorrow if it's super duper interesting. We're talking about the honesty of the former FBI director James Comey versus Donald Trump, and among the texts we got this one. John, Trump said he is 100% willing to testify under oath. I'm 100% confident that he is also fully capable of lying under oath too. What do you do if the guy decides to lie under oath? Except that he goes to jail or gets impeached if you catch him. So the stakes are higher under oath. This texter said, what are lies? Narratives that fit your agenda. Everyone lies. Minimizing the sort of impact of the president's take on the reality of the world. I'm disappointed by that one. There was an editorial in the Sun-Times today, and it said 10 bills that Rahner should sign right now. Let's talk about the state of Illinois for a second here. 10 bills that Rahner should sign right now. We know that they have endless gridlock. We're going on 2 years now without a budget in Illinois. I think if they did have a budget, we'd still be broke, but at least we'd have a budget. So here's 10 things that the governor could actually make happen right now. Tell me if you think some of these, any of these, all of these are good ideas or bad. Your reaction to any of these will be welcome now at 312-981-7200. Number one, he should reform how the state buys goods and services. Streamline it. Number two, allow transgender people to change birth certificates. Oh, let's read into that. Illinois allows people to change their birth certificates to reflect their gender identity only if they have had sexual reassignment surgery. So your birth certificate has to reflect your anatomy in Illinois. I'm old school, and that seems to be reasonable to me. But this bill would change that. You could actually change not just your ID, but your birth certificate to reflect your identity. How do you feel? How do you relate? I'm not minimizing it. I'm just trying to get my head around it. House Bill 1785. Consistent with the latest medical standards, would allow transgender people to change the birth certificates if licensed healthcare professionals who provided medical care signed declarations confirming clinically appropriate treatment or health professionals identify an intersex condition. So if they go, that person has male anatomy, but I'm telling you, that person has always from the day they were born, identified as female, never mind what the anatomy says, you can actually have the birth certificate changed. I'm not exactly sure what the consequence of that is. I guess on the one hand, you could say, well, that's kind of benign, whatever. But I can't explain this to my parents, I'll tell you that. Number three, keep your paycheck private. This is brilliant. I never thought about this. A prospective employer has no business, the Sun-Times says today, asking you to reveal your current salary, information it can use to lowball you on pay. I never thought about this, but I've been asked that question many times in the past, and you always give an exact or fair approximation of your salary, but that gives them the advantage. Demanding, the Sun-Times says, a job's applicant's salary history also can perpetuate unfair salary disparities between men and women. This would make it against the law for them to put on the application your current salary. Number four, lock up repeat gun offenders longer. It says Senate Bill 1722 would increase the sentencing range to between 7 to 14 years for individuals with with previous qualifying convictions who are convicted of gun crimes. I believe they said, we'll give some of the neighborhoods a breather. Yeah, no kidding. Number five, prohibit higher insurance premiums for pre-existing conditions. Prohibit higher insurance premiums for pre-existing conditions. I can live with that. Number six, sell the Thompson Center. I'm okay with that. Number seven, make it easier to expunge a record for stupid teenage crime. Think about this. About 24,000 kids are arrested in this state every year, but whether they should, whether they shot somebody or just jumped a CTA turnstile, their criminal record can follow them for life and make it harder for them to get a job. House Bill 3817 would require the automatic expungement of records of juvenile arrests that do not lead to charges, and of those charges that are dismissed or result in an acquittal. Job seekers asked about convictions would not have to report juvenile court adjudications. What do you think of that? So you hire the guy, and then you find out something bad happened on the job, and you go, gee, I wish I would have known that he was always jumping turnstiles as a teenager. It would have kept me from hiring him. You know what the flip side of that is. This bill, if the governor signs it, would make it easier to expunge the records. Number eight, automatically register eligible voters. We've talked about that on this show before. Register voters automatically when they go for a driver's license or engage in the state at other agencies. Number nine, cut confusing small print from student loans. I can live with that. Number 10, keep the cops from acting like the immigration police. That is, they're going to need more than just a request. They will not work for ICE, the state, city, county police. Be harder for them, the federal government, to get the local police to round up immigrants or illegal immigrants. You with me on that? The Sun-Times says the governor should sign and make all of those law. Just tell me what moved you on that list, pro or con. This is WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. You can text to 312-981-7200 or call that number. Should they be able to change their birth certificate if later in life they determine that they identify with the opposite gender? Change their birth certificate. This text says something about that that I don't believe in just a second. Imagine yourself sailing aboard the most luxurious ship ever built. Think about that for a second. There you are on that boat, and it's gorgeous, and it's so comfortable. And that's the ship that Brenda and I are going to sail on. It's the brand new Regent Seven Seas Explorer. Large rooms and the largest suite balconies at sea. The Explorer is large enough to offer nine different ways to dine. At 750 passengers, though, the ship feels cozy. This isn't one of those gigantic malls on the sea. It's 750 passengers. And about as many members of the crew. April 23rd of next year, we're going to sail from Barcelona to Rome, Spain, France, Italy. It'll be gorgeous on the beautiful blue Mediterranean. And it's all-inclusive, so your shore excursions, your wine, your beer, your soda, your spirits, your gratuities, it's all included. It's our 10th trip with Kelly Cruises and Tours. Whenever we travel with these people, more than the places we go or the ship we sail on, it's the people we remember, the friends we make, and many of them travel with us time and again. I want that to include you. Special savings, too, if you book by June 30th, including a $500 per suite shipboard credit. Call Kelly Cruises and Tours right now, 630-990-1111, or visit kellycruises.com. Okay, two texts to report to you. John, what defines gender if it is not biology? Is it what you wear? Is it how you walk? Is it the pitch in your voice? I'm serious. I don't have an answer for you at 224, but this one from area code 312 says, there is a famous case. Steve, tell me if this passes the sniff test. There is a famous case where a guy married what he thought was a beautiful woman. They had a child. The child, turns out, was ugly beyond words. The guy went to court stating the woman misrepresented her appearance. She later had to confess that she had had monumental plastic surgery. So that while she was pretty now, she wasn't pretty at birth, and her offspring, which carried her gene pool, her genetic information, wasn't that handsome a kid. He sued his wife.
I'm going to say that does not, well, did he sue successfully?
Now, there's a famous case where a guy married what he thought was a beautiful woman. Doesn't say.
I have a hard time with that.
I don't believe one word of this. I need more information, 312, because, oh, that's good copy, but I don't think that's true, my friend. You know, I could do the Paul Harvey thing, though. Never let the truth get in the way of the telling of a good story. I mean, it's a good story. You can use it all you want. But I can't imagine there's a word of truth to that. What'd you hand me here, Elif? Here's the Shakespeare in the Park story. The sponsors withdraw from Trump like Julius Caesar. They're doing a Julius Caesar. New York's public theater lost financial support from two now high-profile corporate donors, Delta and Bank of America, amidst criticism of its production of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. I thought that they were just saying, well, Julius Caesar's like the president. The president gets assassinated. No.
Oh, you'd have to really connect some dots, right?
Well, but I mean, you've seen what their Julius Caesar looks like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Trump lookalike in a suit.
In a golden bathtub.
Oh, I missed that. Really?
This Caesar has a golden bathtub.
They kill a Trump lookalike on stage. I'm sorry. You get to do that. You get to do that all you want. You can sell tickets, and I'll buy tickets to it if I want. But as a sponsor, that's all this is about, by the way. As a sponsor, would I put my money into that? No damn way. No way would I do that. Again, I'm not saying you can't have that artistic interpretation, and I can go buy tickets to it if I want. But would I, as a company, put my money into that? Absolutely not.
How similar is that to what... the comedian, I want to say Nancy Griffith, she's a singer, Kathy Griffin did with the Trump head.
She's a comedian, Kathy.
I know,
Griffin
I was thinking
is.
Of Nancy Griffith, but Kathy Griffin.
Nobody's saying that she doesn't have the right to do it.
Right.
I guess the Secret Service is investigating.
I mean, they're
her
fairly dinner, similar, aren't they?
Well, okay, but I'm not, well, but, sure, but I mean, I think I'm consistent, and then I'll support both of you in your artistic expression. You get to say that. But would I...
No, we're on the same team here. They're both, I think, sort of over the line.
Yeah.
I mean, Griffin much more over the line. But even this, you're depicting the president being assassinated.
Oh, yeah. I think it's... I'm sorry. I think that is so blind to how difficult this is now. I can't imagine that helping people. If I were in that audience, would I think that's funny? Would I think that added additional drama to the show? You've got to be kidding. By the way, this has just been handed to me, Steve. Bad news about the guy that sued his wife because the kids were too ugly.
What happened?
Snopes says false.
The judge gave him the mirror?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, really. Maybe the kid is ugly, but right. She's just fine.
Maybe it's not mom.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Thank you.
Here's John Williams.
Actually, I think we've already, by my count, had three. 209, this is John. We're here until 3 o'clock. Remember now,
Lord have mercy.
Tomorrow at this time, we'll almost certainly be broadcasting live Jeff Sessions' testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee. I want to live in a world where that isn't compelling, but I'm afraid it is. So there he will be, and we will follow that. And then if we get time in the 2 o'clock hour tomorrow, open it up to your thoughts, questions, comment, and dialogue. Previewing a little of that for us right now is Serena Marshall, Washington correspondent at ABC News. Serena, it's John Williams. Welcome back to WGN Radio. How are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing really well. What's the... I have my own answer, but you tell me. What are the $64 questions that people want to hear Sessions asked and answer tomorrow?
Well, it's probably in the what will now be the most anticipated congressional hearing since last week's Comey hearing.
Right, yeah.
They are going to definitely be asking him about Comey's testimony. There's no question about that. They'll be talking about his contacts he had with the Russians during the campaign and as a senator. And remember that during his confirmation hearing, there was some concern over testimony he gave about meeting with the Russian ambassador not being discussed. He had to send in an amendment to the record. And there are questions whether or not he committed perjury by not talking about that. And so he's expected to push back on that, saying it wasn't willing, it wasn't knowingly. I didn't realize and think of those meetings when I spoke about them. But of course, the big question that's going to come up is, did Comey ask him to keep the president at a distance? Why did he recuse himself from the Russia investigation? And the million-dollar question in D.C., is he aware of any tapes?
In fact, haven't they asked the White House to, hasn't the Mueller committee asked the White House to turn over any tapes it has of conversations?
Not just the Mueller committee, but the Senate Intelligence Committee, the House committee, they've all asked the White House for tapes. So far, no answer. And remember at the press conference last week, the president wouldn't engage on that question. He was asked, are there any tapes? And he said, oh, you'll find out soon enough. And then kind of hinted when he goes and replied with, you'll be disappointed in the answer.
Yeah, I remember that.
Still a question of if they exist. And remember, nobody was thinking about these tapes until the president himself tweeted about it. But that's sure to come up during tomorrow's hearing as well.
This is so important. And the presidency hangs in the balance. It's disheartening to see him be cagey about the even existence of those things, you know?
It's interesting on why he brought them up, if then to not provide them, because it would clear everything up on those conversations he had with former FBI Director James Comey. So if the attorney general knows of any, I'm sure he'll be asked about that. And one thing we don't expect him, though, to talk about are his own conversations with the president. So whether or not he'll claim executive privilege is still something to be seen. But we do expect him to push back on any conversations he had with the president since he took on the attorney general role.
This is a little off topic, but can those committees compel the White House to turn over tapes?
Well, they can try, but the White House can claim executive privilege. And remember, the president isn't necessarily held to the same legal standards as a normal citizen of the United States, as odd as that may seem, because there is the ability to claim executive privilege, national security, and concerns around those areas.
There's no way there's tapes. There's no tapes. That was a one-off. It was a quip. It was a figure of speech. You better hope I don't have any tapes because it's your word against mine. That's an idle threat. There are no tapes.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see until the White House decides to come out with it. His counsel that was appointed to deal with this matter also not engaging on the topic either at this point. At some point, they will have to address if they exist or not, but at this point, it's just unknown.
What is the status of the third visit that Sessions may or may not have had with the Russians? Have we nailed that down?
Well, he is expected to also push back on that supposed third meeting with Russian Ambassador Kislyak at the Mayflower Hotel. That was during the campaign. Kislyak was there. Sessions was there. And they wanted to know whether or not the two of them spoke privately. We expect from sources with knowledge that Sessions will make clear tomorrow there was no third meeting.
A lot of us have questions about who's telling the truth, Donald Trump or James Comey, regarding whether or not he asked him to be loyal, whether or not he asked for help on Flynn. But does Sessions have an authoritative voice on that? He wasn't there, so he really can't sort of add to that, can he?
Well, they will be asking him, why did you leave Comey alone with Trump in the Oval Office? Remember, Comey testified that Sessions left the office during a February meeting. So he's going to ask, why did he do that? Why do you think the president wanted a one-on-one interaction with Comey? And did that cause you concern at the time that he made that request to you?
Sure.
And then remember, Comey asked to help keep a distance from Trump. So I'm sure to ask, did Comey actually ask you to help keep him at a distance? Is that true? If so, why did he ask that, and what did you say?
I suspect he'll deny that he was very involved in Comey's dismissal? Because he was supposed to be recused from that process, right?
He was recused from that process, and that's definitely going to be a big question. What was your role in Comey's firing? Sessions wrote the president in May, forwarding the memo from Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein. Remember, he's listed on that removal of Comey. Was he aware the president had decided to fire Comey before seeing the memo? Did he ask the Department of Justice to prepare the memo for him? Those are all big questions that the Senate Intelligence Committee wants answered. And the decision to make this hearing open was at the request of the Attorney General, because he said he wants the American people to hear the truth directly from him.
That's great news. Serena, thanks for the call and the time, and let's visit again later this week.
Sounds good. Thank you, John.
Serena Marshall is the Washington correspondent at ABC News. So Jeff Sessions is supposed to speak at 1:30 tomorrow. Our plan here on WGN Radio will be to broadcast that live and uninterrupted starting at 1:30. And then we'll follow it as long as I think it's interesting. Maybe 1:30, 1:35, we're done. Maybe we go till 3. It might be a group decision, but if it is as fascinating as the Comey testimony, I think I'm just going to keep the pot up on that, Steve, and run it all day long. But again, I think it's unfortunate, because this isn't the sort of thing that we should be eating popcorn and sort of cheering or jeering about.
Well, it's pretty clearly documented, right, that the testimony he gave at his confirmation hearing has been contradicted by the facts when it comes to meeting with Russians, and that's a pretty stark and remarkable thing.
Well, you seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, one of those meetings was where he came. I think the nature of some of these meetings, if we're thinking about the same ones, one of them
we're
is
talking
where
about
just,
the thing in, at the convention where they talked backstage, right?
Right.
No, I agree with that.
But, I'm not real upset about that.
Okay, but there were others, and the question was, have you had contact with the Russians?
Yeah.
And he said no. And he pretty clearly had a few times.
It's another world. I don't know. Like, for instance, if you or I met
a
Russian.
It's another world. Why is it another world?
Because if you
or I.
Because
so much of it is happening that none of it matters anymore.
We need to be cautious of that sort of whole thing. Right. I think more than once now I've been seeing that line of logic put out. And I think we do need to heed it, that the crazy is now the normal, and we need to react to it as crazy as it is every time. Give it its due. It's crazy, or they're lying, or that's inappropriate, and that you're used to it. You shouldn't allow that to happen to yourself, right? But my point was this. If I met a Russian, I would remember that forever. If I met a Russian ambassador, holy cow, my family would tell that story for years. But if I'm one of the elite in Washington, maybe not only have I met the Russians, I've met the Chinese and the Taiwanese, and I know them all. And so then when you say to me, hey, did you meet the Russian ambassador, or what contacts have you had with the Russians? You go, well, let me think about it. I've met everybody. And then you say, you forgot that you came up to him backstage at a convention.
Okay, I wasn't prepared for this conversation, so I'm not real fresh on all the facts. But wasn't one of the meetings a real meeting in December?
I believe it was.
After we knew that there were concerns that the Russians were colluding with the election?
Yeah.
During his confirmation hearing, have you met with the Russians? No, I have not.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's my recollection of it.
So that's either being disingenuous.
Would you forget that?
You see, my point at least, that I think when they ask these people for specifics about people they've met, maybe it's easier for them to not have crystal clear recollection of the meetings. I don't remember who I met with last week.
You would if you were asked about it, and if that person was being questioned about infiltrating an election from which you would benefit greatly.
Yeah, and how did you not do your homework better on that? I mean, you know that's a fair question to ask. So when you say, well, I don't know, I can't remember everybody I met. Well, it's your job to sit down and think about it and figure that out.
There were questions about, right? Wasn't there a questionnaire where they asked what foreign officials have you met with?
I suppose. I know that's the one that Kushner failed to reveal all of his contacts.
I think the senator did as well. His guidance, he said, was, well, if he was meeting them in context of a Senate job, he didn't have to put it down.
I'm just trying to see it both ways, Steve. That's the best I got. That's all I've got for you. That's the only way I can defend that sort of thing.
Well, there might be another way of saying it. All I'm saying is that he's going to be questioned now by some senators who think he lied to them. So it's going to be pretty compelling.
It's still, and then the last point I'll make about this, this is just me looking at both sides ad nauseum, and I'm sorry if this is frustrating. But it's also, I think, an instance where it may be smoke, but there's no fire. You know, so then maybe they didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't reveal that they had a meeting with the Russians. Okay, then fire sessions or, you know.
Because nothing happened, so why do I need to report it anyway?
All I'm saying is, at the end of the day, it may not mean that Donald Trump's team colluded with the Russians. The Russians meddled. But remember, what this is all about, the reason we're even having this conversation, is did the Trump administration, when they were running for office, collude with the Russians to throw the election? That's, if I'm not mistaken, what ultimately this is all about.
You are mistaken. That's what it was about at the beginning.
Yeah, see, and that's where I worry that if we devolve into this sort of political, aha, see,
right.
You didn't tell the truth about that meeting. Okay, you didn't tell the truth about the meeting. I don't like that either. But I'm more interested in whether or not they colluded. And I don't know that one necessarily means the other.
It doesn't. I don't think it does at all. There may not ever be any evidence of collusion, or there may be. I don't know. But
do you think there are tapes, Steve Bertrand?
No, of course not.
There's not tapes.
Absolutely not.
And that's why the president is being so coy about it.
It's a typical Donald Trump. Well, I'll tell you soon. I'll release my taxes soon.
Right.
You know, and then it never comes. I would be shocked if there are tapes.
And he can afford to be cagey about it because they don't exist.
It's not. Is that cagey or is that lying? I mean, I don't have a conclusion that I'm asking you as the host.
I'm a great situational ethicist, and in this case, I can tell you unequivocally, it's not lying, because he said you'd better hope there's not tapes. That's not a lie, and he said I may tell you in a short while whether or not there are tapes. It will disappoint you.
But no one.
That's not a lie.
Okay, but no one brought up tapes but him, so he sort of created the possibility that they exist.
Oh, yeah. Well, now that's just you.
No, I'm
looking
asking
for a fight.
No, I'm not.
No, that's not a lie. The president has not lied about this. We're all taking the bait.
But he created the possibility that they're there. He better hope there aren't tapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the only one who's talked about their possible existence.
Oh, it's juvenile, Steve, and it's not helpful, and it's self-serving. It's everything that I don't like about this president. My like list is so long. You really have to work hard to get to the top of that.
I don't think I disagree with you, but it's just.
I understand your point. John, they have not used. This text is just poured in. They have not used recording tapes in the last 30 years. This is how Trump will. Oh, they put tapes in quotes here. John, they haven't used tapes in 30 years. You should be saying digital recordings. Somebody needs to ask that. Mr. President, are there any digital recordings? Are there any audio files of you with James Comey or the Russians or whomever? If he gets around it that way, then I'll put that in the lie column then. It's 2:22. So Teddy Roosevelt's going to be on stage with me in August. You have got to see and hear this show. It's fantastic. What does it sound like in a minute? These texts have poured in. John, Trump was wiretapped at the Tower. When he said tapes, I think he was thinking that the White House was being taped. Therefore, can he be impeached for ineptitude? I have no answer to that. John, why are you making such a big deal? Because all politicians lie or tell their own version of the truth. Don't do that. Don't do that to yourself. We deserve better than this. Teddy Roosevelt's going to appear on stage with me in August, and the tickets go on sale Wednesday. He'll be with me at the College of DuPage August 12th. It's going to be a terrific show. I'll talk to him on stage. You'll get to answer questions or ask him questions, too. Listen, Teddy Roosevelt was a real rough rider. He was an authentic American cowboy and a bona fide war hero. He was the real deal. But when he first went out west, he wasn't so hardened. He wasn't so rough just yet. And when we visited with him once upon a time on one of these stage shows, he told us about his Wild West days.
Now, here's what happened. I was born a frail and sickly child, very privileged. I was a kind of a 98-pound weakling, and I had a piping voice, as you know, and so on and so forth. I could barely see. I went out to Dakota, to North Dakota, when it was still Dakota territory, to kill a buffalo. I wanted to kill a buffalo. I got out there, and when I got there, this is really the moment when my life changed. I got out there, and if you can imagine it, I should tell you, when I got off the train, it was the 7th of September, 1883. And I got off the train there in the middle of this Badlands country, and I was wearing a designer suit of buckskins. I had had a designer suit of buckskins made for myself, and they were the most beautiful and pristine and precisely cut buckskins in human history. There wasn't a stain on them. They looked like they'd been bleached by God. And I had a silver buckle that was hand-carved and spurs in silver with my initials T and R and a knife hand-carved by Tiffany's. And that's how I started my Western adventure. And if you can imagine it, some of the local boys, the cowboys and ranchers, took a sort of umbrage at this. And they called me Pumpkin Lily. And they called me Interloper and Carpetbagger. And they called me Harvard Man. And they, if you can imagine this, they called me Dude. They called me a dude. And this really upset me. And I didn't want to be a dude. I didn't want to be a rich, spoiled kid who came out to kill a buffalo and then disappeared. So here's what I did. I did everything that an authentic American cowboy can do, never complaining, never calling attention to myself. My job was to wrestle these calves to the ground, and I would hold them there. They would drag them in with a rope, and I would wrestle them to the ground, and then somebody would come up and snip off their testicles and put a hot brand into their flank. My job was to hold the calves down during this operation, and I must tell you that they do not find it exciting. And they squirm a good deal. And it's very dirty and hard work and terribly exhausting. But I did it without complaint. And one day, there was a man just like you. A cowboy who was dressed to the nines. He looked like a character out of an Owen Wister novel. He had a slicker, and he was striking poses for the ladies, and he was not paying attention. He was trying to look like some creature of the Old West. He wasn't paying attention. Because of that, some of the calves were squirting out of the circle. And if you've ever been on a roundup, if those calves get out of the circle, it is almost impossible ever to convince them to come back. And so I was down on the ground waiting for the calf to be brought in, and without even thinking about it, I looked up at him and I said, and I quote, "Hasten forward quickly there." It just seemed natural to me. Hasten forward quickly there. That's what one says. And for the rest of my time in the Badlands of Dakota, whenever I would see these men on the street, they'd say, "Oh, hasten forward, Mr. Roosevelt." And in the saloon in Medora, North Dakota, I'm not a saloon man. I hope you're not. I'm a sarsaparilla man myself. But in one of the saloons, I'm told that there was a drink called the hasten forward.
Don't be surprised by that.
So it took some time, is my point, to be accepted as an authentic He-Man.
Look out didn't come to mind when the cow... I don't even know what those words mean.
Hasten forward quickly there.
That's what Roosevelt said. So that show is going to be in August. Tickets go on sale Wednesday. Be listening tomorrow. We'll give you more details. But Wednesday, the tickets go on sale. Saturday, August 12th at the College of DuPage. She may be the face. Elvis Costello's in town at the lakefront tonight. What's the temperature going to be for an Elvis Costello 7 o'clock tip-off?
Sultry.
I know. Friends of ours said, "Hey, let's go see Elvis Costello." We said, "Okay, that'll be great. We'll go see Elvis Costello."
She may be the song the summer sings, maybe the chill the autumn brings.
Do they have fans at Northerly Island?
Yeah, about 12,000 of them.
Not that kind of fan.
That'll be fine. On the lakefront, summer night.
She maybe the beauty or the beast, maybe the fair.
See, Bertrand's back. He just got back from Iceland. When you were there, were people coming up to you and saying, "What about the president? How's politics? What do you all..." As an American, were you getting a lot of "what's going on in the world" questions?
He's omnipresent.
Yeah.
Especially in Ireland when I was there in April. And a lot of the talk in Iceland was about the the global climate change accord, the Paris Accord.
Even then, I mean, you just got back. They're still talking about that.
Yeah, yeah.
We've moved on. We're so moved past
that.
Well,
and it's a point I was making earlier. They are so much more in tune with the environment and climate change and just, you know, whether it's recycling or fuel efficiency or all of those things, the other countries I go to are much more accepting of the fact that they were just changing the way things are done. We're not doing that yet.
John Mulaney got back from a trip to Japan. He was on with Stephen Colbert. He ran into the same thing. People would come up to him in Asia and ask him about the United States and about politics and what does an American think. This is Mulaney telling that story to Colbert.
Did you have to explain what was going on in America to them? Was this recently, since the
they
election?
They have seen the news. Yeah, this was after the election.
They have the news over there.
But they were trying to feel us out. They were like, so are you happy with recent developments? and we were like, no, we're not. And they said, are you sad? Are you scared? Are you sad? Are you scared? I thought, no, we're not, like, sad. You know, I'm, like, kind of an optimistic person about it all. So I tried to explain that to them.
Yeah.
That to me, it's like there's a horse loose in a hospital. I think everything's going to be okay, but I have no idea what's going to happen next. And, like, none of you know either. Like, we've all never not known together. And on the news, they try to get people. They're like, we have a man here who once saw a bird in an airport. It's like, get the hell out of here. This is a horse loose in a hospital. And we're all like, it's not good.
There are worse things. But there are worse things.
Yes, but it's confusing.
Yes.
Because every day we just have to follow the horse. And some days it's like, the horse used the elevator. You're like, is the horse... You know those days where you're like, is the horse smart? And then we're all just like, why hasn't the horse catcher caught the horse? And then the horse is like, I have fired the horse catcher. And you're like, that shouldn't be a thing.
John Mulaney on with Stephen Colbert. By the way, speaking of depictions of the president, Bertrand mentioned this a little while ago. Steve Bertrand did. New York's public theater lost financial support from two high-profile corporate donors. Delta Airlines and Bank of America pulled out of the funding Sunday amid intense criticism over the production of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. It depicts the assassination of the Roman ruler, but in this case, he's wearing a blue suit with a very long necktie and looks a lot like Donald Trump. No matter what your political stance may be, the graphic staging of Julius Caesar at this summer's Free Shakespeare in the Park does not reflect Delta Airlines' values, Delta said in a statement, and they're out. Bank of America is too. Bank of America said, we didn't know it was going to look like this when we signed up to fund the theater in the park. You know, what could go wrong? Hey, Delta Airlines, hey, Bank of America, you want to fund theater in the park in New York and they'll put on Julius Caesar? And you go, okay, yeah, that's good. What could go wrong there? Well, guess what? In this production, Julius Caesar is Donald Trump, and his wife is Ivanka, and she has an accent. That's how they did it. The reviews weren't good by the New York Times. It's been in previews since May 23rd. I don't know why we're just hearing about this here in flyover land now, but since May 23rd, they've been doing a version of this for some public consumption?
I think some conservative media outlets had been critical of it, and Donald Trump Jr. was retweeting some things over the weekend, and that's how it picked up steam.
Well, it should.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Here's what, where am I reading this from here, Elif? This is from the New York Times. They write, the play, which has been in previews, is scheduled to open at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park. The Free Shakespeare in the Park Festival. Its depiction of a petulant, blondish Caesar in a blue suit, complete with gold bathtub and a pouty Slavic wife, takes on stage Trump trolling to a startling new level, wrote Jesse Green in the New York Times. The vividly staged production hews to the traditional interpretation of Shakespeare's work, he wrote. Even a cursory reading of the play, the kind that many American teenagers give in high school, is enough to show that it does not advocate assassination. Shakespeare portrays the killing of Julius Caesar by seven of his fellow senators as an unmitigated disaster for Rome. No matter how patriotic the intentions, So they're just telling the story, and the story does not advocate that killing the leader is a good idea, mind you. But conservative media outlets have said that, whatever, this is wrong.
Well, I think probably by this point many outlets have said that or feel that way.
I don't know. What would you say? My number is 312-981-7200. Should they pull the funding of this? Should they just bring this thing down? The director of the play, the artistic director for the public theater there, makes clear that the play does not endorse the assassination of Julius Caesar or any other political leader in a democracy. Quote, Julius Caesar can be read as a warning parable to those who try to fight for democracy by undemocratic means. To fight the tyrant does not mean imitating him. I'll read that again. To fight the tyrant does not mean imitating him. Not sure what that means. But he's saying, look, we're not saying killing Donald Trump or Julius Caesar is a good idea. That's the lesson of Caesar. So let's not judge the production, said the guy who's doing the production. Oh, yeah, I said Melania. It's Ivanka that's portrayed. Oh, Melania, not a, yeah, well, that would make sense. Yeah, Melania is his wife, and Melania is portrayed here as the... Caesar's wife is portrayed just like you would Trump's wife. It's 246. 312-981-7200. Okay, you want to go to that show or not? 312-981-7200. Should they pull the funding for that show? You're Delta Airlines. What are you going to do? Ro and Anna are getting ready to entertain and inform you. That'll come your way after 3 o'clock, unlike what you're getting right now. Also, tomorrow at 1:30, remember Jeff Sessions' testimony. We'll broadcast that live here on WGN Radio. This is John Patrick. You go first. You're on the air. What did you want to say?
Well, I want to say maybe Delta's pulling out because after the producer or director's statement, they were thinking that, hey, maybe he's a Trump supporter, and they don't want to be a Trump supporter.
Boy, if he's a Trump supporter, he's got a weird way of showing it. I mean, his saying that I'm neutral, this isn't anti-Trump, we're not advocating an assassination, blah, blah, blah. But I'll bet you $19.73, Patrick, that he's not a Trump supporter.
Oh, no, he's just doing it for the publicity.
What would you think about that, though, if you were the sponsor? Would you continue to finance it because it's art and you don't want to get into the content, or would you pull out if you were the sponsor?
I would continue to sponsor and then, yeah, and say that, no, listen to the story. We're using today's figures to make it relevant and try to get people to come to the show.
Thanks for the phone call. I'm glad you're listening, Patrick.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good day. This is Tim. Hey, Tim, it's John. You're on WGN. Hi.
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
I sort of agree with what the caller before was saying, but it just seems like the people on the left anymore feel that they can do and say whatever they want. But if someone was to have done that with Obama's, you know, or portraying Obama, it would have been World War V. Just like with that comic girl holding Trump's head. If that was someone doing that with Obama, the world would have went on fire.
Stuff like that did happen with Obama. Stuff like that did. But no, let's just take your first point. Imagine if Barack Obama were president, and they said, we're going to do Julius Caesar, but rather than do Caesar, we'll modernize it and do Barack Obama as getting assassinated on stage by 7 other guys. You're right. I think it would have. Now, listen, the reaction to this has been appropriate. They're pulling it. But I think it would have been 10 times louder. First of all, the thing never would have gotten off the ground. But I think you're right. That sure does put it in perspective for anybody that wants to support this. That's a good point.
Yeah, and I think that the people that are financing this thing should all pull their money on it. And I think the people that go see it, why?
Yeah, that's a,
it's
that's
not
the
funny. It's not cute.
Well, that's your, you know, the beauty or humor of it is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, if maybe it says here it's lost financial support. But have they actually canceled the production? I'm not sure what the status of that show is. Last month, da-da-da-da-da. I'm going to have to get back to you on whether or not they're still going to do it or not. Be interesting to see if people show up or not.
Yeah, the world is going through a handbasket, if you know what I'm talking about.
It's absolutely right. Thanks for the call. I don't know, Steve. Now Judy's actually in the newsroom. I don't know if the show's been canceled. It says Shakespeare in the Park sponsors withdraw. But I'm going to guess that the show will still go on. And then would you be one of those people who said, oh, we don't like the sponsors controlling the content or the politicians controlling the content. Even if you don't like it, we've got to support the arts. That kind of dialogue is legit, and that goes on. But I wouldn't I wouldn't use this show to make that point. What else is I going to mention here? John, I was going back and forth on this issue, but then I thought, unless you're as brilliant as Shakespeare, maybe ditch the blue suit and let the play speak for itself. John, I would pull the funding, too, if I were Delta. Hey, Matt, you're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, John. First off, JJC alum right here. So.
Hey, go Wolves!
Yes. I guess my thought is that at the core basis, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Julius Caesar an ordinary citizen that was appointed by the city of Rome to protect them and put them into power, and then the power just got to his head? I mean, in essence, if you think about it in terms of Trump and like that, he advertised himself and campaigned as, I'm not a politician. I'm going to go and I'm going to change things. And I think the point that they're trying to make is that now that he's in, they perceive that the power is going to his head, whether you agree with that point of view or not. So I guess that's just I'll throw that out there for discussion.
Your Delta Airlines, do you pull your money or not?
I can understand from the business point of view. I would probably say yes. I think, let's just say this, if the Kathy Griffin thing had not happened, I think this is sort of derivative. I think if the Kathy Griffin thing had not happened, maybe there wouldn't be as quick of a pullout because that Kathy Griffin thing is still very fresh in everybody's minds.
That's an interesting point. I'm glad you listened, Matt. Thanks for the phone call. Anna DeVlantis, Ro Khan in the studio. Hi, Ro.
Hello, John.
And yes, the water temperature in Lake Michigan, as many found out this weekend, is awfully cold.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, because it's like it's so hot out here. I'm going to go in. I said this on Friday, people.
You did.
Why don't
you
people
everybody.
Listen? People, it moves in little increments. You know, Tom Skilling is in Alaska right now, and someone has to be able to, you know, take his position of calming us about the weather, and no one's
calming
more calm
us.
Than I am.
Boy, that's an awkward position for you to be in, the voice of calm.
Yeah, if you're the voice of calm, we're screwed.
Yes. Well, okay, well, reason is gone. You're the voice of reason, so I don't know what I'm going to be.
Do you do a Tom Skilling? Well, I'll tell you.
Golly. Well, gosh, yeah. There is a, I mean, just to tell you something right now. That it's not going to be like middle of July before you're going to want to go in the lake.
How did I not know this? I've been in the lake. I've lived in Chicago around here for years.
Mm-hmm.
It was 95. And, you know, the lake is very shallow for a great distance. I thought it's only like 4 feet deep for like 50 yards.
Sure.
That will have warmed up in time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, No, it's the other water. It's always the other water that's causing the trouble. So what did we decide? It was 60-something degrees, 64?
64 was 64? On Friday. Judy was checking for you when we were
It curious. Is 66 today.
Yeah, 66 see? Today.
It was 62 last week, actually.
It's getting there.
All right.
Yeah, it's really
sprinting
right
by
now.
By December, it'll be plenty warm for me.
Well, it always is. Like September is when it said it's warmest in October, beginning of October, which is why we have such nice falls by the lake.
What are you guys doing on your little radio program?
Well,
today?
We got a lot going on here. We've got to explain what's going to happen tomorrow in Washington with Jeff Sessions. Also, today, I don't know if you saw this, the emollients lawyers, the two attorneys general from the surrounding states of D.C. are going after the president for basically taking money from foreign governments. And so that's going to that's going to end up.
You mean because they're staying at his properties for meetings and things like that?
Yes, and maybe being paid in other ways, too. I mean, he may be...
What do you think if it's all just about them meeting at Mar-a-Lago and Trump benefits from that as president? Should he be allowed to say, hey, meet at my golf course and we'll do it there? He gets richer. It's him using his office to enrich himself. Is that wrong, that version of it?
I think that we just... This is the first time we've run into this, and we now have to decide how comfortable we're going to be as a culture with that, and then, you know, how far does that actually go? Can he get on the payroll of another government?
Right, and how transparent is it? And
is that
can they
technically
overpay
that?
Yeah. For things, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, are they spiffing them up a little bit? George Washington sold crops to countries in Europe, by the way.
I know that was this whole argument. That's the argument that the Trump people are using. I think the times they have changed here, and so this is a little different circumstance. But we shall see.